I'm Kathy Fuller, and I have got three of the members of the Boston Chamber Music Society with me. Artistic director Marcus Thompson, violist, has been with the Boston Chamber Music Society since the beginning, since 1982, has been the artistic director since 2009. Dmitri Murat, probably one of the newer members of the Boston Chamber Music Society, violist, and Peggy Pearson, oboist. It's great to have you here. There's this quote by Arthur Bliss, which I think is great. He said, "I don't claim to have done more than light a small taper at the shrine of music." It's not very good, like, self-marketing in a way. Sometimes I think for some composers, they kind of do themselves in a way that way. But Peggy Pearson, one of the great oboists of the world, this is one of your pieces, right? The Bliss Quintet. Is this all oboists play this piece?
Actually, this is the first time I've ever played this piece.
Wow. And what do you think of it?
I'm really enjoying it. I love it.
Does he understand your instrument?
Yeah, he writes beautifully for the oboe. He's got there's a little bit of everything about the oboe in this piece. It's pastoral. It's impressionistic. It's very romantic. And it's also spiky. It's a little bit jazzy. It has a little bit of astringent quality to it.
So you get to kind of do it all.
Yep. It's excellent.
What do you think people mostly don't know about the oboe? Is there some sort of stuff that people aren't thinking when they think about the oboe?
I think the oboe has been typecast a little bit as an instrument that plays beautiful, soulful melodies.
And you're more than soul.
Sort of like the duck in Peter and the Wolf.
Well, yeah, that's a thing.
But since Holliger has been playing the oboe, it's really taken on a new role, and it's much more, there's much more virtuosic music written for the oboe.
Heinz Holliger, who's also a composer.
Yes.
And so new music for the oboe, I know as part of the Windsor Music, you have really made sure that new music is being written for the oboe. But when you play a piece like this with strings, is it just easy to balance because the strings are so different, or do you sometimes have to be careful about being too prominent?
Well, I love playing with strings. It's my favorite thing to do.
Is it?
And I think it's because the oboe can blend with the strings, but it also can separate itself from the strings and pop out in different ways.
I think some people may not know. I remember when years in ancient times ago when I was at New England Conservatory and I would move from apartment to apartment, you could always tell when an oboe had been living there because there were all those beautiful colored pieces of string around all the furniture. I mean, what is involved? Do all oboists, people may not realize the trouble you have to go through to make your reeds.
I think most oboe players spend more time making reeds than they spend practicing.
I knew one oboist who had a collection of reeds, and they were all named after different television programs.
Yes, that's
it was like
true.
A Friends reed, you know, and a Frasier
like
reed.
Rockford Files reed, yeah.
But it's hard, so they can fail on you, right?
They do fail, and they're very temperamental. They change with the humidity. And so with the weather, they change. If you go into an air-conditioned room, they change.
So you got to have something at the ready pretty much all the time in case of something.
And a backup.
Okay. So this Bliss, while it does have some serenity, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And to achieve that.
Very pastoral.
Yeah, and I guess the oboe sort of has that sound.
Definitely, yeah.
But that's got to be hard. I mean, these long, long lines. What do you do to prep yourself for serene lines?
Well, long lines, that's what the oboe is good for. We can play for as long as we can hold our breath, basically. So in a lot of the time when we take a breath, it's to get rid of bad air. Rather than, because it's not necessarily because we need air for our lungs. It's just because we need to get rid of the old air.
What's bad air?
Air that is just, if you hold your breath for a half a minute, you have to release the air that's in there before you can take another breath.
I see.
So a lot of the time when I come to a spot where you would think I would take a breath, I actually exhale instead of taking a breath. And what comes in is enough to keep the phrase going for quite a long time.
When you're playing chamber music and you're in front of a crowd, do you have to think about how you look as an oboist at all? Is that something
I think
you have
I
to
would
worry
kill
about?
Myself if
you
thought
had
about
to do that. Is there a favorite spot in the Bliss? Is there a really goosebump
moment? Yeah, there are a few very beautiful harmonies.
Yeah? In which movement? I mean, is there a moment that you can spot for me, like slow movement or?
Toward the end of the slow movement, there's some very beautiful music.
This is a very specific time period that we're talking about, Marcus Thompson. How did you put this together?
Well, these are all pieces that were written between battles, the great battles we think of as World War I and World War II. And they were certainly at a time when the British were not, as a group of composers, really all that plugged into what was going on in Europe. If anything, they wanted to keep their Emerald Isle separate from what was going on elsewhere. And even though it shows some kind of French influence, it's purely, really purely English. You can really hear the difference. I think it started with Dmitri telling me he wanted to play the Bach Sonata. And so if that's on a program, what do you put before it? What do you put after it? I think there's also the other origin. I think a year and a half ago, I played the Bliss in another series. And this was for me coming back to it after having not played it for about 20 years. And, my first encounter with this was with Han de Vries in Holland. And we went on a tour. And as usual, there wasn't enough rehearsal time. We just sort of, I said, well, okay, sit down, let's play this. This is a really hard piece. And I sat down and I'm all concentrated, ready to play it. And I realized, oh my God, this is beautiful. Oh, can't we just stop and do that again? Oh, I just want to hear it, you know. It was that kind of reaction. And every night, you know, I just, you know, my eyes are just open to the beauty of this piece.
Dmitri, what is most misunderstood about the viola?
Thinking.
Viola jokes popping up.
That's right.
Left and right.
No, I think it's a tricky instrument. I think probably what's most misunderstood is to compare it to the violin. I think it's not that close to the violin as we assume. It's much more something right in between the violin and the cello. And I think it sounds like a very close to a human voice. There is that range. I mean, it's very hard to hear a human voice go as high as a violin or as low as a cello, but it's just that kind of medium range.
What is it about this sonata for viola and piano, written in 1922 by Arnold Bax, that you so love?
I love the fantasy. It doesn't really sound like English music or French music or German music. It has an identity of its own. It's a lot of fantasy. Yeah, it reminds me of that Disney movie Fantasia. Yeah, maybe there is at some point the scene with the apprentice sorcier.
Sorcerer's apprentice.
Sorcerer's apprentice, and you know, some sort of fantastical things that you lose control of. There's a lot of that, particularly in the second movement, I would say. Yeah.
Like a crazy spell cast upon you guys.
Yes, absolutely.
I think there is a general feeling about the viola that it's just really hard, right?
Well, not anymore.
Everybody can do everything.
Well, yeah. You know, people play so well these days that you don't get the feeling that people play the viola because they couldn't play anything else, or that only composers play viola, you know, the composer of the viola. No, I think people play it because they love it and because it fits their idea of sound. And you know, there's a mastery of it in our community especially, and I think throughout the country, that that's just undeniable. And so I think it's come into its own.
Well, I could tell you, when I do sit down to play the piano, which is much less than it should be, but when I'm doing something that has an inner part, I actually think of, sometimes it's Mai Motobuchi playing with the Borromeo Quartet, the way she leans in and brings out the turmoil of that inner voice, even in a Mozart, for me, that's like an incredible inspiration because it's the stuff, it's the plot, it's the stuff that's going on in the middle, it's stuff that enlivens everything. And that's only when you're, that's only in classical literature, of course. But I think the viola needs to be heard much, much, much more.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that because the kind of chamber music that, that wants the middle parts to be passive in relation to the outer parts is just not of any interest to me. As a matter of fact, I have a little story to tell. I had a friend of mine, a composer, once asked, well, what do you think of that piece, just in general? And I said, oh, it's a really great piece. And then he asked a more telling question. He says, well, do you enjoy your part? And I, you know, I suddenly realized, oh, okay, so one can be a part of many great pieces and not enjoy your part in it, but enjoy the experience. But in chamber music and in these pieces, our parts, our inner parts, and even in Peggy's piece, where her part is sometimes leading and sometimes an inner part, these are just, these are cherishable parts. They are so beautiful. And, you know, that's why we do this. We do this because of the beauty that's inside that really contributes to the beauty of the whole.
Well, thank you for that. I think, you know, running a chamber music series is an incredible thing to do. And I hope that people get there because it's really life-changing if you let yourself in, you know, and you guys open your arms and let this audience in. So thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.